This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. There's more on power987.co.za.
I'm Ayabong Agawe. Thank you for downloading this Power Business podcast.
10 minutes before the top of the hour, we now shift our attention to the social economy. And I'm joined on the line by the Minister of Economic Development, Ibrahim Patel, who today was chairing a ministerial roundtable with many policy actors in what is defined as, defined as the social economy. And it's a subset of industries, I would say, in the development sector, including social enterprises, volunteer organizations, charity organizations, and of course, community-based organizations and cooperatives. And the Minister now joins us on the line. Minister Patel, good evening to you, and thank you so much for taking time out to speak to us this evening.
Good evening, Ayabonga. Very nice to be on the show, and good evening to all the listeners.
Minister, this notion of a social economy, one person was suggesting earlier on that it's certainly something that sounds quite novel in the South African context. We haven't really characterized many of the industries or activities or kind of work that we're talking about here in that way. Where does this characterization come from, and what in essence does it encapsulate?
Well, Ayabonga, let me tell you what it is. It's really a part of the economy that, if we get it right, can give South Africa an enormous boost. It basically talks about enterprises whose very purpose is to promote a public goal like employment or providing goods in a rural area or something. Now, I should make this distinction. Every workplace, every company in the economy creates jobs or distributes goods or services, but they do it as a byproduct of the main purpose, which is to make a profit. And it's legitimate to make a profit. It's part of our market economy. But where the social economy is special and where it's unusual and where it has made such a big change in many other countries is that those firms, those enterprises, are there to promote development themselves. And it can take the form of buying or selling or making things or fixing things or healing people. It doesn't really matter. Mm. Let me give you an example or two of it. In Spain, we have a very large movement called Mondragon.
Mm.
And they run a university. They have agricultural farmlands that they have under their control. They have factories, they've got all sorts of things. They export in the high-tech sector of Spain, selling to the rest of the world. And they effectively employ 75,000 people, which would make them bigger than any private company in South Africa.
Mm.
And all the profit that is made in the Mondragon group of companies is plowed back to create further jobs, to promote further development, and so on. In South Africa, it would cover things like your stock fells, your burial societies, your cooperatives, your trade union investment companies, not-for-profit organizations, any of those. And what's really fresh and interesting globally about this is, in some countries, it's grown, it's become more important, and we've been a little bit slow in formulating policy support for the growth of the social economy.
Mm.
This can bring young people into the economy in bigger numbers, and it can provide just that that policy boost that's required. So that's what the social economy is about.
Minister, when we talk about policy support, it does seem, I mean, from the examples that you've mentioned, that there already exist within the state a wide array of incentives, subsidies, and forms of measures of support. I think of some of the subsidies that are extended by the Department of Social Development to care workers and to early childhood development centers, and even some of the support that's extended to cooperatives by the likes of the DTI and even the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. Is it then a matter of trying to align all of these incentives under one coordinating policy and then, of course, drive it from that perspective?
You know, Ayabonga, you asked me a question in which the answer is so abundantly clear, and all I can say is absolutely yes. So it's not necessarily about more money. There may be a little bit more support that's needed here and there, but it's basically ensuring that social economy enterprises are able to tap into those resources and we can do more about it. But there's another part to it, and that is the success of the social economy is not dependent only on government support.
Mm.
The experience in the rest of the world that we can learn from is that much of it is using the power of networks. I gave the example today from South Africa's own history, where we've seen with white with the Afrikaner community, white farmers years back creating clover as a cooperative for the dairy farmers, or BKB for the wool farmers, or Sanlam for people who needed insurance. So part of it is bringing social economy players together, that they begin to leverage off their strengths, their networks, their cooperation with each other. And a smart policy framework is one that combines the inherent incentives that lie in a value chain. In other words, things that people can unlock by working better and closer with each other, and the incentive structure that already exists in the state.
Mm.
And today's session essentially dealt with getting ideas on how to do that better and getting ideas on the policy that we should put in place. So the next step for us is to pull these ideas together into what we call a green paper.
Mm.
A green paper is basically a policy document that we put out for public comment, that we want listeners of Power FM and young people in Vilakazi Street in Soweto, in Alex and others, but also older people, women socially driven enterprises, to look at this and say, hang on, why don't you improve the policy a little bit here or there?
Mm.
And when that we've got all of that feedback from everyone, we develop it into a white paper. That is something that's then tabled in cabinet. And if cabinet is happy with it, it becomes a policy of government, and it means every department and every public entity is inspired by it and has to adjust their policies to support that. So that's still a fair bit away. And so the next step for us is to have a bigger conference. Today was an ideas forum for people. We want to publicize it a bit more early next year. And then we're going to put the green paper out for public comment.
Yeah. And then just the last one from my end, Minister. Institutionally, do you envisage at this point? Of course, the process isn't done now, but I'd be interested to find out, because it does seem that this is a cross-cutting issue that cuts across all departments, and not only yours in the economic development, but I would think the Department of Small Business Development, as I said earlier on, the DSD as well, and even to some extent the Department of Science and Technology.
Yes, and even beyond that, right at the end of our session, just as it closed, my colleague Lindiwe Zulu, the Minister of Small Business Development, came there, and she was so keen. She had missed the session itself, but she's an absolute promoter of the idea of the social economy. We look at, for example, the Department of Public Works runs government's EPWP program. The Department of Health have the health volunteers. So it's a cross-cutting thing. But it's not only government departments. It's also civil society. You've got a whole NGO sector out there where people are doing things for love of South Africa, for their commitment to this country and to development. They're all part of the people that we need to knit together to be the support base for the social economy. And then we've got to give young people the inspiration. This is not only about agriculture and retail and so on. It's also the new economy. It's also the new technologies, the new apps that you develop, the technology wave that's changing the world. All of those are opportunities that can be exploited in the new economy, that can be a part of the social economy. But also, as economies develop, as technology develop, as more people get displaced from the traditional economy, the social economy can step up and provide opportunities for human beings to engage, to interact, to do things that create value. And a key part of this is it's not fundamentally subsidy-driven. It's doing things out there in the market, adding value, creating a better life for people, and doing it with the purpose of promoting jobs, extending opportunities for people with disabilities, for young people, for the rural excluded persons. That's what the vision is that drives it. And by the way, as I end, I want to say the international experience in countries as diverse as India, China, Italy, Spain, Brazil, they all have strong components in the social economy. Mm. We have some elements and building blocks. We can do more, and we're ready now to embrace this.
Minister, thank you so much for taking time out to speak to us this evening, and of course certainly look forward to hearing from you as this process unfolds, and as you publish that green paper and some of the deliberations around that one. Minister of Economic Development Ibrahim Patel joining us there.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.